Every day we learn something about about your plans. That's why you buy the newspaper, to learn something about the day, what happened last night, what's going to happen today, what's going to happen tomorrow. That's why you watch the news every day, the school day. That's why when you meet someone new, maybe at the workplace, you try and find out about them, maybe see what else you can get involved in. What is the next best investment you can make? Where can you put your money? Whatever the case might be, you know, a good student is someone who's always learning, always open-minded, willing to take in something. Not take it as gospel every time you hear it. I always encourage you to weigh these things up in your own mind, because I'm sure you're all capable of doing that. So every time you talk about something, I don't ask or expect, in fact, I expect the complete opposite of that. I expect that you evaluate these ideas, concepts, these teachings, and see how much it makes sense to you. Because that is where conviction happens. When these things start making sense to you, and you alone can make that decision and that choice, what's important is we keep an open mind. So, you're here with purpose. You're all here with purpose. You know that for all the comforts you might have come out to enjoy in life, there are still things that bother you, don't they? There are still things that bother you. There are things that keep you up at night. There are things that get, you know, they hit a nerve. Now, what I want you all to do now is I want to imagine that it's just you and I in this room right now. You may have come with your family, you may have come with your friends, but the duration of the next one and a half, 2 hours, I want you to imagine that it's just you and I. We're having a conversation. Just you and I. Ignore everyone else here. Just pretend there's no one else here. So every question I ask of you. And I want you to give me an answer. You don't necessarily have to speak it out, but I need you to find those answers within you. So you can think of it as rhetorical questions. But I need you to come up with them. Because if you are having a conversation one-on-one, when I ask you a question, you give me an answer, would you? But the nature of the sermon of this sort is, when I ask you a question, you can't necessarily give me an answer. And sometimes, maybe some things I share with you, you may have a few questions you might ask, like to ask me, but unfortunately again, you don't have the luxury of doing that again. But that is why, anyway, if you feel the need for that, we have monks at the monastery. You can come and meet them, talk to them, and maybe clarify any doubts, questions that you have. A lot of people do that. On any given day, just to give you an idea, on any given day, we have at the monastery at least 20 sermons going on at the same time. So, individuals, they come as groups, or as a family, as friends, and they come and they discuss their problems. How can they find solace? What is the answer to their problems? People who are well off, well to do, they've got everything under the sun. They've got everything they can hope for, but there's still something that bothers them. So when you have nowhere else to run, this is where people go, for the sun will start. Right, so for the duration of the sermon, it's just you and I. Who is in this room? No, it's you and I. Last week I asked you all to do something for me. I said, as you spend a week, think about the times where you experience a pleasure or a dissatisfaction, and try and find out what the wanting is behind that. Because you were making some headway into the first northern trip. If you recall, I prompted you to question yourself whether the suffering that we've always known could be the suffering that the Buddha taught. If we've always known it, why do we need the Buddha to come along and teach it to us? If it's so obvious, if it's so damn obvious, why do we need the Buddha to come along and share it with us? Right? And Therefore, I ask you to think of suffering in a different way. Think about suffering that is always with you, regardless of whether you have what you want or you don't have what you want. Now, that's a different thing. That's a big difference. See, we have become accustomed in life as we have to think about suffering as something that is in our life, that haunts our lives, when we can't have what we want. Think about this. This is how we understand suffering. When we can't have what we want, we believe we suffer. When you can't be with your loved ones, what do we do? We suffer. We know this all well, don't we? When we can't be with our loved ones, we suffer. That is why the departure of a loved one, sometimes temporarily, sometimes completely, shocks people. From little kids to grown-ups, if you just have a look at society now, and by society I mean who? Everyone else but you? Or are you also not part of society? Yeah, so whenever I say just have a look at society, I think the best place to look at is in the mirror. Because we are all specimens of society, right? So looking at ourselves is as good as looking at society. But we've been on a journey, so you feel that after a while you're leaving society behind. You're going forwards. Because those who come on this journey, and you begin to experience internal transformation. Now you are not going to start to levitate. I don't know how to do that. You're not going to have radiations from your body emanating. I don't know how to do that, so please don't ask me to do that. I'm not going to help you to see your dead mother or talk to her. I'm not an exorcist, so I don't know how to do that. But what I can share with you is, when life takes its toll on you, when life does whatever it does to you, whether it comes as a blessing or a curse, right? When things just don't go to plan, or when things do go to plan, as I said, this suffering is a suffering that is always with us, regardless of whether you have what you want or you don't have what you want. I can help you be free from that. Do you recall last week we discussed fear and grief? Now I'm done inviting because now we're getting to the nitty-gritty of this. Right? So last week I realized I've gone about half an hour over the time I had to activate the sermon. And then my biggest concern was perhaps you've got other responsibilities in the places you have to be, people you have to see, so maybe I should be a little bit more thoughtful about the time I need to sermon. And I know you're busy people. I know how busy you are because I have been there. Life is very busy. Because we go to those to see people who help us get what we want. Yeah? So life is busy. What is a business? A business is a busyness. It's what keeps people busy. What are people busy doing? Getting what they want. That's how the world works. That's how everything works. Everyone's after what they want. So you might have an appointment at 12:30 and you have to leave this place by 10:30. So I'll try and be a little bit more mindful of that. Think about fear and grief. We talked about this last week. We made some nature of things. If you did spend some time thinking about what we discussed last week, now I want you to bring that. So this time we open our homework. Okay? How many wantings did you manage to find in a typical day? How many wantings? Let's start in the morning. You're all too familiar with that wake up call that sounds something like this. Remember that? It's that very sound. The last thing you want to hear at 4 a.m. in the morning. I don't know whether it's 4 I feel that this brothers and monasteries so that you see this more than a thing. When you hear that sound, the tikitik that goes off in the morning, especially if you have to stay up late the night before, or you've got something you're not really looking forward to that morning. Many of the in-laws are coming around. What do you want at that time? It's 4 o'clock. What do you want it to be? Anything but 4 o'clock. See, your morning starts. Your morning starts with a sense of vexation. Folks, I don't want you to read it there. We live in the era of a Buddha. You don't need to suffer like this. You can read good books on this stuff. They'll say, you know, start your day at 4 a.m. in the morning, like a 4-day work week. Right? There'll be plenty of books written on this stuff. But what I don't find in any of these books, because I've read them all, I've listened to all of the talks, I've spent quite a bit of my time studying human philosophy and positive thinking and stoicism and all these wonderful things that mankind has discovered, invented for their well-being. And what I don't find in any of them is, let me tell you what I do find. They talk about how do you manage your fear, how do you manage your greed, when you get angry, how do you manage that? In fact, there are classes in this sort of thing, isn't there? Anger management classes. Give you a virtual race of that, and you need one that, not really, this is a virtual one. I don't want anyone else knowing that. Maybe this is you and I right now. If you are in the room with me, I say, put your hand up, because it's not embarrassing me. Anger management classes. So they teach you how to manage your anger. When you manage someone, do you get rid of them? I mean, is that the whole deal of management? No, you try and fix them, you try and keep them the way you want. Right? So that is what an anger management class does. And then it comes in various guises. You can have a fear management class. They talk to you, about how you manage fear. There are places that teach you about how to manage lust. Surprising. You know, they'll say it's quite normal to feel anger, fear, jealousy. They'll say these are very human emotions. And it is what makes us human. So it's down to you as a responsible human being to learn to manage them. Here's the deal. Here's what I don't quite like about them, right? And forgive me for saying this. When you manage it, it's better for the other person. Yeah. It's alright for the other person. When you learn to manage your anger, it's better for the other person because they don't get the short end of it. But you're still angry. If you can learn to manage your fear, you may put yourself forward for various opportunities, people might invite you and you will say, yes, I will do it. If someone says, can you stand up on stage and give a talk to 500 people? If you can learn to manage your fear, you get the talk done. So someone benefits from that. But deep down inside, you still have those butterflies in your stomach. What if it would be nice where you could just get on a stage, stand up, speak, and not feel those butterflies at all? Some say it comes with practice. No. This is only practice. I tried that. So you're doing Toastmasters. To see if practice is going to fix it. No. I tried it. Didn't work. There were still at least one or two butterflies. I could check over a great deal of them, but at least one or two, at least caterpillars were there. Doesn't work. There is not another philosophy, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to present to you that actually deals with fear, greed, jealousy, hatred, animosity,
frustration and disappointment that actually uproots the whole thing. Not prunes it to be dead at the later time, but actually uproots the whole thing. And the reason for that is, as you may already know, in this philosophy we learn about the principle of cause and effect. We don't deal with effects. So let me share with you something right now, which I'd like you to know immediately, from your own, because I think it will help you breathe a sigh of relief. Isn't it? I know that you, from time to time at least, will experience things like fear, jealousy, disappointment, frustration, anger. Sometimes you are so good at hiding it, nobody else knows, but you know you do. I know that you go through these emotions. In fact, that is why you're here. You're not here for a lunch. You're not here because you got nothing better to do on Sunday morning. You're here because these are the unsaid truths, the unspoken truths. But it's not something you can go and, share with everybody. Because, these are emotions that people don't really like to know that you have any. It's okay for them to have, but it's not okay for you to have any. When someone gets angry, they can justify all that to the customer, right? I was angry because, he said this, but he didn't do it. And if someone says, don't get so angry, what do you mean don't get so angry? It's so unreasonable, so unfair. But when someone else gets angry, you give them a different piece of advice. Don't get so angry. There may be one or two people in the room, who struggle to control their anger. I'm saying it's not something to control. What a shame if you have to control. Do you think the Buddha controlled his anger? He learned how to control his anger. Would you like to learn to control your anger? Shall I teach you how to? That's shame. We are not here to learn to control our anger. We learn to hear how to uproot our anger so we don't feel anger at all. It's a whole new way. We are not here to learn to control our despair. We are not here to learn to control our sorrows. We are not here to learn to control our disappointments. We are here to learn how to completely and entirely, categorically uproot it. So you are free once and for all. Each and every one of these emotions that is deadly is a byproduct of a wanting. Each and every one of them. Anytime you suffer, it is because there is a wanting that is behind it. Now just take a walk back and relate this. Think about last week. And because I asked you specifically to engage in this task, if you remember to do it, see if you can spot those wantings. If you managed to get hold of what you wanted, think about the experience that you had at that time. Let's say you wanted someone to get something for you. Okay? Maybe it was your birthday. Perhaps, you managed to achieve something. Perhaps you get a good grade in the exams, and now you want someone to get something for you. When you want someone to get something for you, and you finally got it, how do you feel? You can have it. Yeah? This applies for all of you, it's universal. Is this not a universal thing? This is only applied to the kids in the room? What about the adults? If you were happy, was it not because you got something you wanted? Even if it could have been something as simple as a hug from someone you loved. Maybe your child came and worshipped you for the first time. Now they started to do something like that in one of the schools they were working with. They started working with an international school. And we've done a series of talks with them. And the teachers have been sharing with us that the parents are not over the moon. They can't begin to understand what this transformation is. Children who just ignored their parents, children who thought that their parents were simply something that they were entitled to, just by virtue of being parents. Parents are the people who have to feed us and cherish us and give us what we want. Now they begin to appreciate them. They begin to realize and see them through gratitude. But our next opportunity will be to talk to the parents. Don't be over the moon just because your child comes and worships you, because then again there's something you want. You know, when a child, we do encourage our children to be respectful towards their parents, right? Do you know that's not to please the parents? We never do it to please the parents, because that would be madness. If a parent has to be satisfied, has to be fulfilled, has to be made happy by their child, you know, how mature do you think the parent is? At 45 years of age, let's say, you are still dependent on your 15-year-old for your happiness. I don't think that's very mature for a parent. A parent should be independent. And then teach the child how to be happy, regardless of what happens around them. So we never do it to please the parents. We only do it so that the children of the parents make use of that opportunity. So the children of the parents have an opportunity to learn some merits, to engage in good habits and behaviors and learn something for themselves, become virtuous. It is for them, not for the parents. So should we not do it? We must. And as parents, should you not encourage your children to do it? You must. Not to please yourselves. If they don't do it, don't be all upset about it. That's all it's for. Do it on their behalf. Because it's right, it's the right thing for them. That's all. So wanting. What other wantings did you have? Let's start from wanting. So we have this week today. And the moment you hear that, there's only one thing you want to do. So then you have your makeup, and one of you will have to make the tea in the morning. So we don't know who gets that wonderful chance. The opportunity you look forward to every morning, yeah? I know that was only the first week something. We talked about this last week. The story of the toilet seat. So anyhow, you look forward to your morning tea, but someone has to go and make it. Now, you may have become accustomed to this now. You know, some things that you do, perhaps there are times where you feel frustrated and annoyed about it, but you know, because you just have to do it, you know, it's just a dumb thing, you have to do it now. You tend to not focus on them so much. But as we do these talks, folks, I need you to pay more attention to what you're doing. Spot those wantings and spot those vexations. Reflect on those moments where you don't feel happy. You don't feel happy. If you don't feel happy, make a mental note of it and bring it to me. Bring it to this room. So that when I talk to you about why your happiness is not with you, you can go back to those events, and this is your lap of life, you can go back to those events and apply the principles that I share with you and ask yourself, does that make sense? Is that why I did it? That has to happen in your own mind. I can share with you plenty of examples, but those examples will be mostly my examples. For this to start making sense, they have to be your own examples. Because life is so varied,
right? So bring them all here.
Now you wake up, right? If you've got children, you've got to go wake them up. I'm talking about a typical household, right? So either it's the father's job or the mother's job.
One of you have to do it.
And usually, if that person fails, then they say, "I'm going to come ask that person and wake you up now. You better wake up." Or now some households,
"I'm going to ask somebody to come and wake you up now. So you better wake up." Should be either way.
See, when you want your child to be up, so that he's ready to either be driven to school with yourself or to the school, man. That is, I'm talking about a typical household, right? And if he doesn't, she doesn't wake up. She says, "Oh, just 5 minutes, mom, please, just 5 minutes. You know those elastic 5 minutes? They are timers. So you say, "Okay, right. Just 5 minutes. After that, I want you up and go wash yourself." You come back in 7 minutes. And where are they? Still in there. Parents. Hello.
Parents.
How do you feel in that moment? You and I? How do you feel in that moment? Does it not bother you? Let's be frank. I know it's not the same motivation as, you know, say, you were due
a bonus at the end of the year, and the boss said, "Sorry, we just don't have the money.
So, no more trips, no more flights, no more travel, no more holidays, no more bonuses." It may not be on the same scale as that. That's why I said, I need you to be very sensitive now. Sensitive to your own life. These minor flights that come into your mind, you know, at the end of the day, you know why you feel so exhausted? Because they accumulate. They accumulate. And then the poor dog has to get the kick. You know, if your dog knows that you've had a bad day at work, can you be proud of yourself? Tommy knows when I have had a bad day at work. Should it be like that? Or is Tommy responsible for that? Or if you're a young kid, she's gone to Montessori, out of nursery, she's drawn this picture that she thinks is the best thing, right? Picasso from Peter. She brings it to you and says, "Apache, Apache. Tari, Tari. Ami, Mom, see what I've drawn."
You just
come back from a bad day. Or there's just so much traffic. Or your boss said that you have to finish something and you've got to take some work home. Whatever. In that moment,
what is your reaction to a child? Do you actually give them your full attention and celebrate their victory, their achievement? Or in that moment, is that not a botheration to you? Don't you really want to say, "Go away now"? Our sisters, you never leave there. I'm going to keep digging a bit. I'm going to keep digging into your lives, but I don't know any of you personally. I'm just going to keep on digging, and when we strike gold, right, you can thank yourself for it. Why? For bringing yourself here. But let's see if you can strike gold. So in that moment, when your little child comes up to you and says, "I love new nursery rhyme at school today. Shall I send it to you?" And you're waiting for that call. Or you just got off the phone and you have some terrible news. Can you, in your right mind, just completely ignore what happened and give this child the treatment that she deserves from her father? Ask yourself, are you always like that? Or in those moments, do they get the brunt of the stick? Do they have to suffer because you haven't found the truth to happiness? See, in these moments, ladies and gentlemen, can you spot the wanting? There's something you want to happen, but it hasn't happened. There's something you want to happen, and you're on the edge of your seat, waiting for it to happen, and that is so,
so such a burden on your shoulders. You can't focus on anything else in that moment. That is the be all and end all of your life. It seems that way. When you're so eager and want something to happen, you know, you can't focus on anything else. Oh wait, not now. Bring it later. See, where's your cool? Where's your usual coolness? Where's the coolness you have when you're, you know, when you're amongst your friends? Why can't you be cool all the time? Don't you like to be a cool guy? Just all the time, though. Why are you only cool some of the time? Because in the other times, you heat yourself up. You are a furnace. No one can heat you from the outside. The furnace can't heat you from the outside. It is heated up from the inside. You heat yourself up. Because there's a trick that the mind is yet to understand. In that moment, if I asked you, why are you angry? Why are you upset? Why are you worried? Why are you troubled? Why are you annoyed and agitated? You would tell me, some answer. It's because this hasn't happened. I'm waiting for him to say yes and he won't. I'm waiting for this to come through and it hasn't. I'm waiting for this email and it's not coming through. And I'm waiting for an internet connection and I keep dialing up and it's not connecting. I've run the company, I've run the service providers, I've run them, I've run these people, those people, they haven't arrived yet. How do you expect me to be happy when I'm going to the shower and I've put soap all over my body and the water's run out? Remember that body? See, when you shampoo yourself, you're always in fear when you open that tap. When you open the faucet, you're always wondering, will the water come? You're always there. That is the wanting. Now, you don't recognize these things because technology is so advanced, the human race, we as a humankind are so advanced that we can, you know, get 9 times out of 10. When you turn the faucet, water comes. Now think about why we have had to advance our technology so much. Because we can't bear the wantings. We can't bear it. We haven't become stronger as a species, ladies and gentlemen, we have become weaker. Physically we might be strong, but mentally we're childish, feeble. You may see a bodybuilder who spends half his time in the gym, you know. Muscular guy, right? Well built, right? 6 foot tall. What happens when he proposes to someone and she says no? What happens when he can't get what he wants? See, he's physically, big name, well built, strong, but mentally? It's okay to be physically fit and strong, that's fine. But what's not okay is when you can't mentally deal with the problems that come into your life. And it's not a God-given ability that some people have and some don't. It's not like that. It's simply down to, do you understand the truth? Have you realized the truth? Have you realized the first noble truth of suffering? Have you realized what it is? See, if you ask a typical guy, what is the first noble truth of suffering? They'll tell you, well, then I can't have something. That is suffering. So the reason for that, what is the cause? So what is the second noble truth of suffering? They're saying, not being able to get what I want. No? That's how people normally feel. I'm sad because I can't have what I want. But if they take 2 children at home, right, as Molly and Anya, they're supposed to play with each other and get along. I have got a new toy. Molly has it. So now Mali was the toy. So Mali is sad, he's throwing a fit now, tantrums, everything, right? I want that toy, but I just not letting me have it. So he comes right to you. I want the toy. Not in those words, you know how they are spread, right?
They'll make sure that the label is not spelled.
Yes. You know the truth.
I want it.
See, in this moment,
what do you want to do?
Now, I know you want to do it because they're children and they're kids. They don't have the ability to understand. But what do you want to do? You ask Ayya
to come.
I say, Ayya,
let Ali have it. Give it there.
You know what you're doing? You're teaching your children the wrong things. Let me give you a moment to have to see. When you say, Ayya, come in.
Just let Ali have it. You are the Ali now. He's the Ali now. Just let him have it.
I'll teach another one tomorrow. You're teaching the children the wrong thing. What are you teaching your children in that moment? If you're unhappy, it's because you don't have what you want. I mean, that is the problem that your child has brought you. You're endorsing it. You're endorsing it. You know, young children, their minds are like sponges. You know this stuff. They are always observant. With the problems that come into their life, they learn about life. Because it's far too early to go to science, college, and school and learn stuff. They're still learning at home. And how are they learning? They're learning by doing things. The practical experiences that they're exposed to are their teachers. And you have to guide them. I'm talking about how my parents brought me up. You can't fault them for it because they didn't know any better. But I'm sharing these things with you, things that someone I had hoped might have shared with my parents, but unfortunately it didn't when we were younger. Today I share it with my parents. And I share it with you. See, I'm helping you to empower yourself so that you can both fix yourselves and help your children along the way. And your children's children. And anyone who you can have an influence on. Anyone whose lives you can touch. Honestly, don't you agree that when your child comes and says, Ayya's not letting me have what I want. I want to play the computer game, but Ayya sat at the computer, he's been there all day, I don't get a chance. I want the bat, I want the ball, I want the stick, and my brother's not letting me have it. You know, you don't take this like this, because I'll tell you what, fast forward 25 years. Fast forward this event, 25 years. Go to the future, 25 years, 30 years, 40 years. Let me now paint another picture of you. You're on your deathbed. You have some land. You have some property that you want to share or bequeath to your children. Now that they can identify you, you better forward your life if you love your children. What's going to happen in the moment you say goodbye? Family feelings. Have you not seen them? Have you not seen them happen all the time, right? I'm not saying you've done it, but this is not the inside of it, so I'm just talking about human mentality. A mindset that has not seen the truth, a mindset that does not see the right answer. This is what happens. Where did it all start? Back when they were just children. But see, the moment you think goodbye, you think farewell, and leave, Ayya and Ali are not going to be at all. Because now they'll be like, why did Ali give me the bigger part? Why did Ali get the bigger part? Aren't I the one who was supposed to get it? I'm the local idea. I'm supposed to get the bigger part, portion of this. Have you not seen families split up because of that? You may know people to whom this is not. Perhaps friends. Perhaps, you know, distant relations. Maybe cousins. Now they don't see eye to eye. These were two brothers that shared the same womb. They grew up in the same woman. They drank milk from the same mother. But today they don't see eye to eye. Unfortunately, I have many friends. Because when they were younger, they didn't take the right lessons. Because parents were none the wiser. Because when Ali cried for it, what he did was called Ali and said, "Give him. I didn't like to part with it either." So he thought he was making a sacrifice. You know, he did. He didn't know he was making a sacrifice. See, now what you're teaching Malik, that for me to be happy, I need someone else to give up and make a sacrifice. Let's come back again, sort of in the middle ages, right? So there was the younger age, and then there was the end of your story, but then let's take go back a few chapters. Malik is often narrated. Now he's trying to live with his father, better happy. Now, Mali remembers, or he has learned from his mother, from his father, that to be happy, someone else has to make sacrifices. Yes? Come on. I don't need to spend without you, right? You're an intelligent audience. You know where I'm going with this. So let me put it this way. Every time you, every time any of you have had to make a sacrifice because it was demanded of you, why can't you make a sacrifice to me? Every time that is demanded of you, it is because when the person you are making a sacrifice for, when they were younger, their parents said, "That is how you should be happy." That is the lesson they learned. If you're the one who's demanding other people to make sacrifices on your behalf, unfortunately the same is true. I'm not making offense to them. You know, the long and short of all these days, I'm trying to make happy so that you can be happy on your own. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm trying to help you become happy. Be happy, not become happy. Just be happy without having to have someone make a sacrifice for you. A sacrifice is not made happy. That's why they call it a sacrifice. If you have to get the people you love to make a sacrifice for you, I have to question whether that is actually love. Because in love, the deal is we make the other person happy. So we say, "I love you. I don't do anything to keep you happy." Now, if you have to expect the other person to make you happy by taking sacrifices on their part, how can that be love? So, love, but love really. Love truthfully. Love without expecting sacrifices. And love without making sacrifices. Huh? Did you say that right, someone else? You said love without making sacrifices? Yes. I'm going to show you how. A sacrifice is made when you have to give up your happiness for somebody else. Yes? Agree? You have to give up your happiness because you believe happiness is in that. What if I can teach you to be happy on your own? And your happiness is not dependent on you being in possession of an object, a situation, an event, an outcome, an experience. If you could learn to be happy without dependence on anything else, and you were happy on your own, by default, now tell me what sacrifices you have to make. What is the sacrifice you have to make? We're not in the business of making sacrifices. And we don't expect others to make sacrifices either. But I beg you, please take this the right way. There's a good balance in making fair sacrifices. So until you realize that everyone around you has begun to understand the love you are still on the way, but you haven't fully grasped it. Maybe there are still things that annoy you, bothering. There are still things that you treasure. If you have to make those sacrifices. But I wish and pray for you that you don't have to keep making sacrifices forever. Today, honestly, I don't make a single sacrifice. I'm not here to make sacrifices. I'm not here to make sacrifices. So I'm not here because I'm a nice person. If by definition the sacrifice is you giving up something you love so that someone else can be benefited. So you see, this is what we teach our children. Because we don't know any better. We teach them, if you want something, get the other person to make a sacrifice. So in married life, they learn that sacrifices have to be made and they come to expect it. And when those sacrifices are not made, now you go looking for someone else who is willing to make a sacrifice. See? All because they started out wrong. You know, the parents are the child's first and best teachers. In most cases, at least. They learn everything from you. From the way you talk, to the way you walk, to every turn you make, every book you hold in your hand. They learn. You know this because we were all children once. You know, some would say, you know, you resemble your mother so much, not just by image, but in the way you behave, the way you act, the way you do things. I don't know why I'm talking about parents here today a lot. Maybe there are not a lot of parents here. I don't know. Don't come here with an agenda. It's just what comes up. But I do care. That's not a sacrifice. Care is not a sacrifice. I care. I care because I want what is good for you, what is right for you. Right, so it's time to wake the son up, the child up, and he's not getting up because he wants another 5 minutes. You're back in there trying to wake him up again. You start pulling him by his leg. Come on, up. Up now. And come on. How do you feel that? You know, there'll be a line that they cross and then you'll be like, this is the last time I'm telling you nicely. Don't awaken the body. The devil. Is that a nice thing to be telling the truth? Huh? Don't awaken the devil in you. So what is the child? When the child goes to school and they ask, what's your father? That's not a nice thing to be telling you. I'm not saying you're suggesting even that any of you do it, but now you're all saints, aren't you? You're the nicest people. Yeah. Yeah, honestly, no. Please don't think I'm speaking to you in a condescending tone or in a lower tone. This is nothing like it. I love you for who you are. I want to help you. And my teachers help me. I talk about these things so freely because I've been there. And I know what this feels like. And I know there's a way out. And I know that you don't enjoy when you are not your best self. Don't you agree? When things happen and you're not your best self, you don't enjoy that, do you? Don't you wish in those moments of what? Oh, how I wish I could be better than this. In fact, sometimes you regret later on. Maybe at the end of the day you think to yourself, why did I shout at my mother like that? I shouldn't have. What a lesson I taught him at that time. I got angry. I started pulling my hair out. You know, what's that lesson I taught him? As a young child, why am I the parent? I'm supposed to be more mature. I'm supposed to be the better one. I'm supposed to be the one who knows how to deal with things. And the way I behave in front of my children, shame on me. I don't want you to go through that. You care so much about your children, but let me care about you so I can help you not fall into that pit. He's not asking. Because if I had a shield, I don't have a weapon, I have a shield. I can give you that shield because we don't attack anyone. But with this shield, you can protect yourself from anything. In fact, I can think of it this way. This is a shield, but then there is also a weapon, but that weapon is attached to the inside of the shield. Can you imagine that? So there's a shield, imagine it's this, and there's a weapon, a pointy weapon, it's very sharp, but it's not facing the other side, it's facing the inside. So what would that weapon do? If you have that shield against you, what does the weapon do? Who does it cut? Yourself. It does no harm to the person outside. This is metaphorical. Understand? I'm sharing with you the message that was passed down to me, by the Buddha and his disciples, all the way down to my teacher, and that has helped me to slice, to cut, chop, remove those defilements and cankers that have overtaken my mind and that made me weak and feeble in the face of adversity. I used to get angry. I'm no different. This is not the person. I used to feel fear and sorrow and grief, frustration and disappointment. You should have seen me when I was sick. When I was in my early 20s. Sometimes I used to be somewhat of a snob. Oof, what's this? Did I not tell you last week I didn't like what I used to be? But now I have you. I know that you can go on this journey. Because you can speak to me and it is younger. It's the same blood that runs through my veins. Cut me up and I'm just as red as you are. The same people. I breathe the same air as you. So the same truth that has set me free will set you free. Whether you're young or old, teenagers, adults, elders, senile, that is not. Whether you're 25, 35, 45, 55, 65, 75, 85, or last 5. So, you're putting in my leg. You don't want to hear. Don't be angry. You don't have to. But the point here is, first of all, you are angry at that moment because you want him to get out of bed. That's why. You want him to get out of bed. I need to step outside of thinking that you are angry because he doesn't get out of bed. Do you see the difference? All of you? Sir? Madam? Do you see the difference? You know, automatically, and immediately we feel that the reason we are angry is because he won't get out of bed. But that's not true. So the reason that you are angry is because he doesn't get out of bed. How come? There's another mother next door. She's not angry. Why is she not angry? Because she doesn't want your child to get out of bed. That's why. What does she want? What does she want? She wants her child to get out of bed. But does her child make you angry? No. Then is it the not get out of getting out of bed that makes one angry? No, it's the wanting. Now, as immediately as I've said that, I can also say something else. No, what I don't want you to do from today is when you get home, right? So next day tomorrow's Monday. Is it tomorrow school day? School, alright. So tomorrow morning, when you go to
están quedando en el stand
and look at yourself ready.
No,
I won't fight this now. Good, Swami comes and says, no, you can't push up. Now, good, don't touch my hands, and
really got those responsibilities, you and your father's problem,
and I'm going to carry on. And Swami wants to say, once you get home and you do it. No, that's not what I'm saying. You cannot be relieved of your duties and responsibilities. Let's get that straight. Duties and responsibilities are one, suffering is another. Every parent here has a duty to their children, a responsibility to their family. You cannot be void and free of that. Every citizen of this country has a duty and a responsibility. Large. And we cannot be relieved of that. That comes part and parcel of us being a citizen of the country. At your workplace, ladies and gentlemen, you are responsible, you have a duty to do your duty. That is not part of that. Suffering is not part of that. That is optional. The duty is mandatory. So please, let's not make it too unhappy here. I'm only here to help you relieve yourself from suffering, not to do anything with your duties or your responsibilities. In fact, once you are free from your suffering, you will be able to fulfill the full extent of your duties and responsibilities much better than you could previously. Because, and there's a reason for that, it's because now you do it because that is what's got to be done. In other words, you extend yourself in the service of others with no expectation in return. When you have an expectation in return, the party to whom you are fulfilling that service doesn't always get the best deal because you're always looking out for your needs. As much as we try not to, there's always something in the back of my mind. When there's a wanting, when you want something out of the deal, you're not always interested in the other party. So you can't fulfill the duty and responsibility. Let me give a very simple example, like teachers in the house. There are two students that you have to teach. One is very respectful, very courteous. When you walk into the classroom, they'll stand up and they will greet you. At the end of the class, they'll try to worship you. They'll do their homework and whatnot. Then there's another student, they're not so courteous, not so respectful, they might even call you by your name. Have you started doing that in your head? No? Okay. It's coming. That was the first culture shock that I had when I went to the UK. And my first day at school, my teacher came to the classroom, he was a maths teacher. Your maths teacher. Everyone said, good morning, John. I was like, what? And I stood up. And then John said, simply, we don't do this. That was my first experience of a little culture. You know, we could argue all day long whether that is right or wrong, but that is not the point here. What's right for one culture is right for that culture, perhaps. Okay? So I'm not here to criticize any culture or how people do things, whether that is the right way or the wrong way. My point is this, folks. The same reason I told you earlier, encourage, teach your children to respect you. Why? But then, when you come home from work, teach your child to greet you and bring a glass of water. You have no idea what a blessing that is to that child's life. You have no idea. Have you heard of the Anantari Bhavana? They call the heinous tense. There are four of them.
One,
to murder people. Two, to murder an arm. Three, a mother. And four, the father. Okay? In Buddhist teaching, these four deeds, if you commit any one of them, then there is no hope of any freedom or liberation for a very long time. Just think about the fact that the mother and the father are, you know, regarding which they are held. Killing of the mother, killing of the father is on the same line as killing of an animal. Now, if that is so bad when you do the bad stuff, what about when you do the good stuff? You know, if you can't find an arahant to go and offer a glass of water to, what can you do? How can you earn almost the same amount of merits? Do it with your parents. Do it with your parents. Because there are only two people in this world who love you selflessly. The third is not a person. The first is the mother, second the father, equally the third, although above the two of them, is not a person. And that is the Buddha's Prabhupada Mahasangha. Why? Because they have no self to sustain, to maintain. They don't care about themselves because there is no self for them to care about. Therefore, their service is entirely for others. You may check this at face value for right from making that because I say so, but as you progress in the Dhamma, you will begin to realize because you will become a member of something. No? I'm not going to roll you up or shave your head, but in the way that you approach life, in the way that your thinking patterns begin to change, you will begin to realize that it is utterly pointless to try and sustain, maintain, foster, and take care of yourself. Very soon enough you will learn that it is all just an illusion. Today what you feel as myself is a complete and utter illusion. But everything you do to safeguard yourself. Right now. You know, you say about the thing, you talk about the things that make you happy. Who's this you? The self that you think. This is what we always learn to talk about. I am myself, me, myself, and I. You know, who's the center of the universe? Of course, I am the center of the universe. Very soon you begin to realize that this is just not a lie. It's a falsehood. But you come to that later. That was just a traitor. For what's coming next. So, coming back. Someone is up, and now it's time to go to the washroom. Someone's in the washroom, and there's only one. You're knocking, come on, hurry up. Let's see. When people come back, what do they do? Simple answer. Count the number of people at home and make one wish for this. We are very resourceful. We are very resourceful. That is why long, you know, when I come to the first one or two servants, I share with you, I said, now we have become so impatient. We can't bear things any longer. We can't tolerate things. I'm not talking about, you know, making people go to the washroom. I'm just saying, you know, that's generally true of all things. It's almost impossible for us to bear and tolerate things. So we seek other answers to problems. Answers where we are relieved from our waiting, relieved from our vexation, relieved from our wanting as soon as possible. So you are quite familiar with the running out of water scenario. Now, in Sri Lanka it's not so bad, but in some cold countries, if you run out of hot water, then you've been there,
what it feels like.
And if that really does happen, it's not a nice thing.
See, where is the cold water from?
The cold water that comes out of the shower, what does it drop from? Your body, right?
Fair enough.
The body feels cold and it starts to, you know, to shiver, tremble because of the cold.
What is the mind like?
Have you ever managed to get a drop of cold water on the mind?
Have you ever managed to do that?
Then what is the mind stuff?
If you are mind and body,
when the body is the one that has to endure, why is the mind stuff?
So who wants it? The body wants or the mind wants?
The body never wants. The body just has needs.
Food is needs or necessities.
Clothes is a need.
But have we not gone beyond our needs and into the realm of wanting?
Did you just walk, you know, into your bedroom, maybe where you have your wardrobe, open it up mentally.
Nice, so mentally open up your wardrobe. Have a look inside right now.
So I'm permitting you to go home,
not literally, but mentally. Go home, open your wardrobe and have a look inside.
Tell me, what proportion of everything you have in there is an answer to your need versus what proportion is in there as an answer to your want?
How much of it is in there because you want it versus how much of it is there because you need it?
How many pairs of shoes can you wear at any given time? Think about it before you answer.
It's a very good question.
How many pairs of shoes can you wear at any given time?
But exactly,
but that's all.
Because, you know, I have one pair of shoes for work.
You can't wear the same thing if you go out, you know, to the restaurant.
Different pair of shoes.
And then you can go, and I do some sport, I go to the gym, so I get another pair of shoes for that sort of thing.
And then when I go to the parking, I get another pair of shoes for that. You know, when I go to the trip, I need some sandals or something. So, you know, I need a few pair of shoes.
Okay,
so that's fine.
Why do you need 10?
Honestly, have you ever experienced impulse buying?
Have you ever walked into a store and walked out of it and then thought, where did all this come from? Have you ever questioned your own intentions
and thought, did I really need all this?
You know, so much so that some days you go home and then perhaps one or two days later, you bring it back to the store. And he says, you know what, I thought I wanted it, but I don't think I needed it anymore. Can I have the money back, please?
Because
that is not a need. Because if it's a need, you can't return it. You need it. It's a want.
Now you tell me, what's so bad about wanting something? What's so bad about it?
It's harmless.
If I can afford it, I can have it in the store, have it.
What's the problem with wanting?
The problem with wanting is nothing to do with whether it's bad or good. It's not about, you know, what's going to happen to the other people. You know, wanting has to exist for the world to operate. You know, business can't survive without wanting.
Isn't that why they put the actors on TV?
Are they just talking about the things you need, or are they going on about the things you want?
Of course, you know, for business to survive, then it has to be wanting.
But that's the thing.
People make you want things, and then when you want them, you go and buy your thing.
You want things because you believe they make you happy, and that is the problem I have.
Buy, acquire, hoard anything you want. The problem is, I have a problem with you thinking when the things you want make you happy.
That is not true.
And when you believe that there are things that you want that make you happy, here's what happens next. When you can't have it, you suffer. When you do have it,
you are in fear.
Fear of what?
You are losing it. Then you will say, yes, that's why I put a wall up around my house so that no one can come and take it from me. What about the ants?
When you have something sweet and you bring it home, what do you have to put it on?
Do you bring a saucer, put the water on it, right?
The anchor.
That's in the good way, put something on it, and then put it
on it. Because,
you know, you want it.
You can't have the ants take it from you.
Then there are the natural elements. You have the fire takes it from you, so you have to keep it fire retardant. The wind blows it away, so you have to make it firm and strong. The sun takes some of it away, so you have to put a roof above it. The water takes some of it away, so you have to keep it watertight. Energy makes it brittle. Time takes it from you. So you have to keep it conditioned, recondition it from time to time, maintain it. See, this is what life has become in the end. Maintain the things that you want. Can I sum up life to you? Is that alright? Would you come here and do so? Here's what that is. First, wanting something, doing whatever is needed to acquire it, doing whatever it is needed to protect it, and then suffering the movements it. Repeat. Tell me about let's talk to the day. Wanting things, acquiring them, doing whatever you need to acquire them, doing whatever you can do to protect them, suffering when you eventually lose it, repeat. And in the raw sense, that's life. Because if all you needed was a need, life doesn't have to be so complicated. If all you needed was a aim, if all you needed was clothing, if all you needed was shelter, and if all you needed was medicines, covering your feeling ill, I've got all of that. Are you ready to settle for that? Are you? I'm going to bring a bus. Bring something. And some other baby girls. You're not prepared. You have a wonderful story to say. Swami, I'm a father, I'm a mother, and my duties and my responsibility. And the only thing is that I'm not ready. Okay, I'll look after you children. I'm not after children for you because I'm not sure you have certain things to do all that. Sometimes people come with their whole family. Mother, father, two boys and one girl. The whole family comes. They visit in love, they realize the truth, and they all come together. Father goes on to become a monk. The mother goes on to become an anagarika. The son goes on to start the anagarika program in the hope of becoming a monk eventually. And the daughter, she also goes to start becoming the anagarika program. As a young anagarika. For no other reason than having realized that wanting is the problem. Wanting only brings suffering. I know behind all of this, you will still have an argument. See, I'm very nice like that. I bring up the arguments that you have, and then I completely shatter them. I'm beginning to read minds, I think. No, I don't have that skill, but what I do have is experience of having lived the life actually. So I know all these arguments that you can come up with. Here's the deal. You tell me. I'm going to say, you know what you're saying about me. What you're saying about me, I can't agree. Whenever there's a wanting, there's a fear, and there's a grief, I agree with all that. But, when you get what I want, something else makes me really happy. Makes me happy. And I can give you countless examples of that. When I get what I want, I'm happy. You can't deny that. So, what is so wrong in enjoying a few pleasures in life? What's so bad about that? What's so wrong about that?
That is your misunderstanding of what happiness is. Wanting never brings you happiness. Wanting itself is a vexation. Wanting itself is a vexation. And what is a vexation again? An unsatisfactoriness. A discontentment. A feeling of void. When the mind is void of happiness, when the mind feels that, you know, I can give you an analogy. Have you been, just think of that time when you're trying to set the nails on the wall, when you're trying to nail something, you know, they put a calendar up on the wall, and you have to put the nail first on the wall and then put the calendar up. You put the calendar on and it crosses the room. What do you do then? You pick it up and you move it again. And it happens again. Do you know the meaning I'm talking about? Where you're trying to do something but it's just not happening, but you can't give up because you have to do it somehow. Or how about this? I give you a pot and I want you to fill it with water, but there's a caveat. There's a hole in the water. And if you don't fill the pot up, I'm going to have you again. Just imagine the situation. Say the king of the land, and he comes and gives you punishment. And that punishment is, fill up the pot with water. There's plenty of water. There's one pot. And there's a hole in the bottom. Now fill it up. And if you don't fill it up, within the next hour, you're going to be dead. Just think of the feeling you would get in that moment. If you were presented with such, I know this is a hypothetical situation, but unfortunately, this sums up every situation in mind. As hypothetical and as imaginary as this situation might feel, ladies and gentlemen, I need you to come to this concern. This is every situation in life. You have to do something about the problem. But no matter what you do, the problem doesn't go away. But you can't just give up, you have to do something about it. How much? We're talking about vexation. See, if the king said, you have to do it, now you start feeling the pot up because you can't just give up, you have to try it. But no hole to try is going to fill the pot up. Why? Because there's a hole in the bottom of it. So every time you fill it up with water, that water leaves the bottom. You know what I'm saying? This is life. At the workplace, has there ever been a day when you thought, that's it, I've done everything. Now we are from today onwards, I don't have to stress. I don't have to worry. There's never a day like that because every day, with every day comes new stresses, new worries. If depression is now is a passion of it. I mean, you know, if you don't have depression, it's like you've not done anything in your life. No, there's a lot of talk about this now. Apparently. And I don't get anything unless someone comes from the outside and wants to change with us. Because, you know, honestly, because you're not depressed. Because we didn't want it. So you can't be depressed. What is depression? You are depressed when you can't have what you want. I might have more simplified it, but in the simplest terms, you know, depression is when you can't have what you want. Actually, you know, you are led to that situation when you can't have what you want. Because there's never a challenge in life that can come to an end. Every challenge just keeps on going. There's never an end. Do you think you can ever say, that's it, I'm done cooking dinner? What happens next evening? I'm going to cook dinner again. It's never finished. What about paying the bills? Never finished. What about fixing the car? Never finished. What about making the people at home happy? The people you live with? Sometimes you spend a fortune and take them on a holiday to the Bahamas. At the end of the holiday, I said, right, you know what? I spent all of my father's money, everything that I had in my inheritance, to make you guys happy. From today onwards, you just have to be happy. Don't expect me to make you happy again. Alright? What happens in 2 weeks' time? In 2 weeks' time, what's happening? You have to start planning the next holiday. Then one thing where enough is enough. Just give me one thing where you can do it and say, you know what, that's it, I've done it enough. It's never enough. It can never be. It can never be enough. When it comes to maintaining your voice, sure, it's never enough. When can you keep yourself and say, that's it, you know what, I'm not going to keep you anymore, be happy with that. You know? Because in 6 hours, your body is going to say, hey, time's up. Leave me. Never come. If you are an employer, you have people at work, right? You are employees, you want to keep them happy, your subordinates, right? You give them a promotion. For how long is that going to keep them happy? You give them a pay rise. For how long is that going to keep them happy? You know this. Now you, at the end of the year, you give them a nice sweet bonus. For how long is that going to keep them happy? All the perks in the world you give them, do you think they're going to be loyal from that day on to your company? And never ever be interested in another offer that might come from the other side?
No.
Because people don't know how to be content. Why? Because wanting are never there. Every day there is a new wanting that comes into people's minds. You've heard of the phrase the golden handcuff?
Yeah.
You know how that works? Every time you go one step forward, they create a lifestyle for you that you have to maintain. Now maintaining that lifestyle, the resources that you have are simply not enough, so you have to keep on working, keep on improving yourself. Work a few extra hours. Find another investment to make. Start another business up because you have to maintain that lifestyle. And as soon as you enter that world, right, that slice of society, now there are other expectations that are put on you. And now you must sustain that. See, it's never enough. If you sit down to watch TV, by the time you stand up, right, there are 10 things at least that will say you need this in your life, otherwise you can't make it. You're being there. You know, right from a bottle of soft drink to a takeaway place that you have to go and get something from. You know, you're always bombarding yourself. Things that you have to have in your life to keep you happy. Now if you want to be happy, of course you have to go and give them something you have so that they can give you what they have. Until that is done, you are left wanting, but not just wanting. Remember, buy one, then two, three. Whenever you have wanting, you are either in a state of fear or you are in a state of greed. You are in a state of greed when you don't have what you want. You are in a state of fear when you have what you want because you are fearful that someone or something might take it away. Mothers, allow me to talk to you. Do you remember when you were younger and you weren't a mother at that time? Growing up, you had your friends, you had your aunties, you had your cousins, you had your elder cousins, perhaps your mother, grandmother. There was a time when they started to ask you, didn't they? Two is not enough. When are you going to make me a grandmother? Your mother would have asked you. good,
and now you have to make it narrow.
And your friends, you know, your contemporaries, if they were having children, they'd start putting them up. Maybe school, but they have this one better.
Nowadays, right, let's bring it to the contemporary age, right? So, you know, people say, you have to. And then from that day, there came a time where, in your mind, you decided, you know, I want children.
The thought occurred into your mind.
Maybe, in fact, there was a time in your life where you thought, I'm not going to have children.
There might have been a time like that in your life.
But all that changed. So, from the moment you decided you didn't want to have children,
now you have to completely change your lifestyle.
Mothers,
you completely change your lifestyle.
If there were things that you were in the habit of doing which were not going to be good or comfortable or wholesome,
but try to be around, then you started changing your habits and behaviors and lifestyle.
This is the sacrifice of mother makes.
The sacrifice.
Because that is not what the mother wants. As a woman, she wants what she wants to enjoy, but she has to give it up so that she can have a child. See, the sacrifice is being made. It is not that any longer she no longer wants it. She wants it, but she wants a child more. So sacrifice. So now, perhaps she has conceived, okay, 2, 3, 4 months in, 6 months in, now it's really showing, and now you are in a state of water.
Yeah?
Yes. What if you are trying to conceive but you can't?
Once the water comes into the mind,
you're trying to conceive but you can't.
I know a couple who decided to have a baby in a test tube.
And they shared with me all of the pain that they went through. There are couples who have split up.
There are couples who...
This is not the first time I'm hearing this,
by the way.
There are couples who have split up. Split up because they can't have children.
My argument here is not whether that is right or wrong. My argument here is a completely different one. That is, look what wanting can do.
Look at wanting can do.
In fact, perhaps the two, as they started living together, you know, maybe one of the couple said to the other,
honey, I think we should have a child. It's time, isn't it?
Would it be lovely if the two of us began a child and bring a new life into this world?
Perhaps that wanting was implanted by one of the partners into the other, and it is they who ultimately thought and decided, you know what, we can't do this anymore. I want children, we can't have children together. So where did that wanting come from?
The very person who said, I love you more than anything, till the two of us part.
Where's all that?
See what wanting does. As fast as it will bring two people together, it will bring them apart.
Just as soon as it will bring two people together, it will bring them.
Because now they're together, they want a child and they can't have a child, and therefore, if they want the child more than they want each other, what happens now?
You have to find a moment.
But let's say the mother has conceived, it's been a few months now. Now she's going to the clinic, she's going to the hospital, getting checkups done.
Why?
Mothers, you can at least speak out.
You live in fear and you're not in those days.
When the bigger road was too bumpy,
every time there's a big bump on the road, how do you feel?
You quickly put your hand and call me up on your belly.
You're scared. See, fear came into your mind.
Don't dress it up as love.
Let's accept it for what it was. It may be love to the other child, to the child, but in your mind, what was it? Was it not fear? It was because there's something you want now. You want to help each other. It's fine to have to help each other, but why have fear is my argument. Why have fear? What does fear do to the child? When you go to the clinics, you stand in the queue, right? You do all that because you want something. And then I'm going to say, you have the child. Now when you say, you know, when you regain consciousness, let's say, you know, when you go to meditate the mother, if she becomes, you know, unconscious, when she regains consciousness, what's the first thing you want to find out? Huh? Is the child healthy? Until you can get an answer to that question. Mothers who've been there, until you can get an answer to that question. Fathers, if we were there, until you can get an answer to that question, what is your state of mind? Fear. Yes, the child's got to be healthy, but what's fear got to do with that? What's fear got to do with that? Fear is all about wanting. You want the child to be healthy. Yes, the child's got to be healthy, but what's the deal with the wanting is my question. I'll come back again because you're asking, so-and-so is saying that we shouldn't want anything at all. Should we not want the best things for our children? Should we not want the best things for our families? It is not wanting that brings the best things for your family. Okay, answer this question for me. If wanting feeds your family, why do you go to work? If wanting gives you a family a place to stay, why do you get a divorce? Why do you get a mortgage? It's not wanting that does that. There are causes that bring rise to that effect. You don't work because you need the money. You need the money. You need the means to pay for their well-being. That is a need. Needs, even I have. Even the Buddha had needs. That's why he went on Mars. He didn't go on Mars just because it was an opportunity for to help others, but he was also hungry. That was a need. When offered a robe, he accepted it because that was a need. The mind does not have needs. Body has needs. The mind has wants. An untamed mind has wants. And these wants that make you suffer. Once again, as a good parent, as a good husband, as a good wife, you have to do every duty and responsibility for the family. I promise you, you can do this without your wanting to do it. This wanting is not, you know, you might ask me, sometimes if you don't want it, you don't plan it. Shouldn't we plan it? Should we just take it as it comes? No. Plan it. Wanting, by wanting what I mean here is the pain that the mind goes through, is the vexation that the mind goes through, is an unsettled feeling that the mind goes through. The mind doesn't have to be unsettled because the anana, but an unsettled mind does not give anything to the family. If anything, what happens when the mind becomes too unsettled? When it becomes shaky? Now, it awakens the devil in the mind. See, when wantings just keep on growing and they can't be fulfilled, what happens then? You're not the best person you are. You become someone who you are not proud of. But keep away your wantings. Do away with your wantings. But fulfill the riches, fulfill the responsibilities. That is a state of mind that we can aspire to. We can, I promise you. We can do that. Take the whole monastery away from me. I'm all right with that. As long as it's there, I'll fulfill my duty. That is the mindset I want to help you have. Take everything that belongs to you. Because you know, one day it is going to be taken away from you, right? So let's not pretend that this is just a coincidence.
It is an inevitable experience. One day it's all going to be taken away from you. Do you see how people suffer with attempts? Have you seen that? All I want, now you say, but sometimes you say you should do whatever you want.
Here's the deal. That is the only word there is in the English language.
I cannot leave the word want out and talk to you about something. I have to say, all I want for you is for you to be free of wanting. Seems very ironical. What a paradox that is. All I want is to help you to be free of wanting. That will only make you a better mother, a better father. Because you will not have the filters that you have to always check and balance as you do what you have to do for your family. Right now you can't get the best thing for the other person because there's always a vested interest for you. Because there's something you want out of the deal. Every deal there's something you want out of it. Therefore you can't become the best version of you. You simply cannot. But you can, if you deal with the wantings and you can get rid of them. So these wantings are a curse. For as long as you have the wantings, you're always going to be in either fear or greed. Greed when you don't have it, fear when you have it, or when you fear you might not get it. Either way. If you're looking for a business transaction, you're always in fear, might you get it, might you not get it. It's always like that. When you're in fear for something, you're in fear, might you be able to get in, might you not. Imagine there's a long queue, and they put a board up saying, last few tickets. Can you remember that feeling that comes into your mind? That is the feeling of vexation, because there's something you want right now. What about the guy who's standing on the side? He doesn't want to go in. Does he experience the same vexation? He doesn't, because he doesn't want to get in. So it's not getting in or not being able to get in that makes you have a physical frustration. It is the wanting to get in. I'm not going to assume that this one talk is going to convince all of you. I know there are some who may be convinced and who have been. But keep an open mind. If you feel some sense in this, at least some truth in this, just slightly, maybe you have a few more questions before you can completely grasp this concept. But it's starting to make some sense, maybe not entirely. I've been hanging there. This is not going to bring you any harm. Once again, now. If at the end of these talks, your family comes and tells me, Swaminathan, you know, my husband, he was such a good man before he started the civil service. Now, he doesn't even look after the family. He doesn't pay the bills, he doesn't do the washing, he doesn't wash the dog, I have to bore that now. Then, I'll have to have a word with him. Because then you're going the wrong path. That is not what I'm asking. You know, this is the last thing I'll say today. Once you begin to understand the profoundness and the depth of this deal of wanting and why and how that is the real suffering of the Buddha speaks of, there will come a point where you are so free of wanting that you will not even want to be free of wanting. In other words, at the monastery, oftentimes people come and say, Swaminathan, we want to become a monk. Sometimes, you know, and usually at the end of the year, because you have been anagarika for a period, at least a year, at the end of that period, they'll say, Swaminathan, is it time now? Can I become a monk now? I say, yes. When you can tell me that you no longer want to become a monk, you can become a monk. So stop asking me for it. And then I will know that you are very good. Because what happens if they want to become a monk? Then they have not yet still instilled within them the philosophy that I want to share. If you want to become a monk, you are not ready to become a monk. Why? Because if they somehow come and take your robe away from you, if they take your arms away from you, if they come to you and say, you are no longer a monk, we extradite you, we kick you out of the sasana, where does that leave you? Suffering. Leaves you back in grief. What's the deal? If a bhikkhu has to suffer because he has lost his arms robe, if a bhikkhu has to suffer because he has lost his robe, he was never a bhikkhu in the first place. He was not a bhikkhu in the first place. The bhikkhu is someone who has done a very suffering. My happiness does not depend on my robe. If someone comes and takes it from me, I shall gladly give it to them, provided I have something to cover my decency. Because my happiness does not depend on my happiness does not depend on my arms robe. If it did, I'm not a monk. Because my monkhood is not based, or it's not patterned on my arms robe, my shaved head, and my robe. It is a state of mind. That doesn't stop me from fulfilling my duties and my responsibilities. I have a duty and a responsibility to do service to others. That brings me here. However, many in the audience does not delight me, and it doesn't bother me. So, let me have several hundred people. If there are two people here, it's still okay. You can't upset me or make me happy or please me by that. Because if you did, you shouldn't become the service, right? Then, if your presence is what makes me happy, should you become the servant? Then I don't practice what I preach. In fact, I've got nothing to offer you. I'm here telling you, I'm going to teach you the philosophy of happiness that is not dependent on anything. But this is a person, okay? Then the talk does not matter the work, right? Next week, let's try and get into the details of where wanting comes from. Because if everything is cause and effect, then even the wanting is an effect of cause. But before we start talking about that, I need you to be convinced that wanting is the problem. So here's what I want you to do for this week as homework. Whatever you've taken from me, whatever you've heard today, just give it some thought. Some of you have watched enough to be in families with you. You know, over a cup of tea, just discuss what you learned in the sermon today. Debate amongst yourselves. If you feel strongly about what someone else has shared, whereas the other person in the family feels not so much, just have a chat amongst yourselves. Don't fight or fight. Just have a chat. Just see what the other person thinks. Do you agree with someone else saying what someone else has said that you should do? This wanting being the problem? Is that so? But if you deal with wanting, then how can I as a father provide for your family if I don't want to provide for the family? How do you see that? What do you think about that? You ask the daughter, you ask the wife, you ask the son. See what answer they come back to you. You know, like you discuss a good film on the way back home. If you think this was worth your while, then take some time to discuss it among yourselves. Then you'll be left with some questions. Bring them. And one by one we will resolve them. And please leave these questions for next week we'll pick up. It's a really interesting question. So we will leave it here. I mean, this will be back here for next week. And I am supposed to give you an announcement. You know, I think this is fantastic. If you're not aware of this yet,
that
these two things.
Drinking.
At the monastery, when we reached the centenary milestone, so that is when we were 100 in number of monks, we started doing one of the meritorious deeds for the Panchayat Maha Puja. Don't be fooled by the name Puja. It's really the word Puja has much more profound meaning than just thinking about it. These days we talk about what Puja actually means.
Today the dictionary means often
you mean you read something.
But Puja means something much more than that,
much more profound than that.
These words have a lot of effect on what we wish and can perceive.
Every Poyade and every other Saturday in the monastery, we had a last hearing for 100 monks present at the monastery. So there's a parahat that takes place all within the monastery premises. We don't need the monastery, we all within the monastery premises. We do it at the power. So the Buddha statue, sorry, the conference of the Buddha and the Buddha Buddha that they carried in front with the Brahmins and the Jeevan Buddha, they carried the flags and the Murai and so on. So it's a procession. A procession to behold. If you're not witness one of these, and you'd like to become a take part in that, you may be able to find a short video clips of this on YouTube and so on. Once you want to do one, we can make a short video clip and post it so that other people can rejoice in them. Because this is an offering that you're making in the Mahasangha, not to an individual. On that note, I must say, last week, a gentleman came and offered a robe. And I asked the gentleman, sir, you're not making this offering to me, are you? You're offering this to the Mahasangha, aren't you? I said, yes. Because that is who you must make an offering to. Because the Mahasangha is not a who. Remember I said, there are three. Mother, father, there's one more. The Mahasangha is not a who. It's a virtue, it's a quality. It's an energy. It's an energy of inspiration. It's not a person. Remember when the Buddha was offered a robe by his stepmother, Mahamadalu, and the Lama, he said, sir, your mother, your stepmother is here to make this offering to you, please accept it. And on two occasions, the Buddha said, no, I reject it. On the third occasion, the Lama used to have this habit of keep on asking until he gets what he wants. So he kept asking on the third occasion, the Buddha said, because now the Lama said, sir, this is your mother. She loves you, she dotes on you. And when your mother passed away, she looked up, you were like her own child. She begged you. She did everything for you. Why did you reject this offer? And what would you say? Ananda, there is not a man in this world who knows and appreciates the love of the mother than I do. And that is the very reason I deny her offering. Please ask her to offer it to the Mahasangha, not to me. Because I am also part of the Mahasangha. So whenever you make an offering, offer it to the Mahasangha. So one of these days I'll explain to you what the Sangha is. Today, you might think that the Sangha is a half in a yellow robe. That is not a Sangha. You might go to the Sangha Vas, perhaps. That is not a Sangha. If any man in a robe is a Sangha, then you have to question some of the things that some people do in robes. Just because someone is clad in a robe doesn't make him a Sangha. A Sangha is an attitude, it's a quality, it's a virtue, it's a mindset. It's who we aspire to become. Sangha is the eradication of ignorance and attachment. But here's time. I'll share everything I know with you in a matter of 2 hours. But all of these things. So this offering, the Panchayasana Mahapuja, you might ask, what is Panchayasana? There are five rules for this. Again, I can't explain all of this here. I can, just give you a platform. I want to set up the Panchayasana. There's a meaning behind all of this, and how they all help you on your path to nirvana. I won't accept any offering from you unless you understand how it relates to your nirvana, because I am not here to take your offerings. Thank you very much.
I'm not going to take anything and have to walk back home and fill up my chamber. That's not what I'm here for. You need to attain Nibbana. What are you doing to attain Nibbana? I'm here to share with you. Make use of that opportunity, that's it. So the Paisasana Mahapurjana which includes the Bharata, we start with the Bharata of all the monks, all the Anagarikas and Anagarikas of the monastery, as well as the young children. You know, we have our home and the monastery. The young children, that they also join with us. And the Dhammapasa children also, they come along. And they have a possession which leads into the Dhamma hall. And from there on, we have the monastery and the rest of the day on the course. And if you're joining this, I do invite you to stay along for my teachers, Guru Sanamantes, talk in Singhalese, which will happen in Austin. I think if you listen to one of them, you won't have to listen to them in your hands. So I invite you to join them as well, if you have the time. So the announcement of the Panchayat and the Link of Ascending to be held on Saturday, the 19th of August. So you have about a month from today. We've been organized by the joint participation of the Bhagavad Gita English 7 group. So they can meet on Saturday, and the Sunday Dhamma Talk group, which is all new. There's a separate WhatsApp group for this, the Panchayat Mahapuja group. So it has been created to share the information with all of the participants. And we see two groups as well as the other groups in the mission to participate in this very short event. So there's a group, as you may know, for those who attend these talks. If you, as I said, one day there's a WhatsApp group. So if you join the WhatsApp group, you will get these announcements. And I have a lot of respect and regard for those who have taken the effort to organize this, because I think what they're trying to do is to take you on the journey that they have been. And I have a lot of respect for that. Well done to all and each and every one of you who's thought outside of just your own head, your own background, your own submission, and you share and spare some thought for that of others. All I can say is, come along, and then after that, I don't want me to say anymore. I'm not there just because that's where I ordained. I'm there because there is for me paradise on earth. Come along and see. Come along and see. So, that'll be on the 19th of August. The date is available. Reserve it. And we'll go see you there. Right, so the homework for next week. That is. Vexation to think about wanting and how is the freedom from wanting that brings you pleasure, and how fear and grief always come along, come as part and parcel of this wanting. So, have a discussion between the members of your family if you get a chance to do that. Perhaps this is on the way home today. And I said, right, just have a good chat. What do you put to think about Swami Ramsa said? Do you think that agrees with you? Oh, my God, okay. Why did that happen? Where did that fear come from? Out of nowhere? There was a dog that just ran across the road. Was it the dog that broke the fear? Then you have to go leave dogs. And chasing them away. No. The fear didn't come from the dog. The fear came from the living. Why? Because there's something you want. You want the safety. You want there not to be an accident. So shouldn't we say an answer? Yes. you should be careful. I'm talking about the mental suffering of it, not the physical. We should avoid physical suffering as best as we can. But the mental suffering we must eradicate by understanding the truth. Alright, let's do the way to transfer. I think it's a mental process. Yet again, I'm not being honest to my inner head. First and foremost, then, let us take a moment to transfer the merits in the world of fire. By making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Guru Chakrajan, this is the Dhamma, and engaging with various natural aspects today. Let us take a moment to transfer this next to the Bhikkhus and Bhikkhunis of us and the Pasadans, who have since time and memory have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha, and passed it down through the generations of the Norman lineage to reform the situation which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand, and comprehend the Dhamma. We will also find ourselves among them, other monks and nuns residing in your local temples and armies, who have always been by your side if we can make. The same moment transcend is based to all Krishna Mahasana represents throughout the world and through the chief periods of all instructions who dedicated their lives to the best of the world's sentient beings. This also takes this moment to remind many parts to transfer these merits to my teacher, Guruswami Mahasaya, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits to those who made great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, either by translating these talks, sharing them on with others, or inviting others to join them, and made by the power of these merits. If any of them have been born in lawful ways, they feel themselves to be born in blissful ways. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all achieve the supreme service. Let's also take a moment to answer these merits. To friends of the monastery, to the devotees, and those who provide the Mahasangha in return for their merits, in their journey to attain the supreme discipline garden. Let's take a moment to answer these merits. Those who provide Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicines, as well as continue to extend their good wishes and their know-how. By the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they acknowledge the supremeness of the service. Let's also take a moment to answer these merits from mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nieces, and nieces, and relatives who help us support and assist us as best as possible. May by the power of these merits, they may heal the physical wounds of ailments and to help them overcome any obstacles to their environment. May by the power of these merits, they will strengthen from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may the quality and the supreme bliss of Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the neighbors and brahmins, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the neighbors, gods and deities who are committed to connect and fulfill some of the sasana. Let us transfer these merits to our guardian deities, the people watching the idol verse, the deeds like a profound sway, and by the power of these merits, the prospering divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from their natural deeds, fulfill the natural deeds, fulfill the noble taking of power. And may they all attain the supreme bliss of the Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to our ancestors, those who have passed away in our name, our loved ones, those who have predeceased us. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us remind ourselves that in this long journey of samsara, they have all been friends and family to us, and they have provided us with shelter, provided us with food, and every comfort that they could possibly provide us with. It is also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who protect the peace and harmony of our nation, members of the armed forces, as well as the police force. They sacrifice their lives to provide us with these comforts. May we all rejoice in the next day, we have all a fresh day. As well as those who might have lost their lives to the war we did friend or home, may we all rejoice in these merits. It is also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who might have lost their lives in national calamities, such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, blizzards, forest fires, and so on. Imagine ourselves that in this long journey of samsara, they have been mothers and fathers to us, friends, siblings to us, they have provided us with shelter, arms, comforts, and all pleasures of life. May they rejoice in all these merits, and by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the lawful planes, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May, by the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all achieve the supreme bliss of Nirvana. And finally, by the power and blessings of all the things we have all acquired today, we give the wings of the adventure, leading hundreds of thousands of thousands on the blessed land. And by the power of these things, may you and I, and everyone who's helped make this program a success, become a Rafa Mahansay, or an Anathemi Mahansay, in this very life itself, and in the era of the governments of the heavenly nature. And blessings of the Lord should be given. And the members of the Mahasangha and transfer the message to
Thank you.